We now begin Maseches Avos. This is Perek Aleph, Mishnah Aleph 1:1, and the Mishnah is a famous one. The first half establishes the basic outline of the chain of transmission of the Torah Shebaal Peh especially. And the reason why it does that is because, say, the Meforshim, we want to emphasize over here specifically that this is Pirkei Avos, and certainly it's full of practical advice and Musar and ideas about self-improvement and Talmud Torah. But the point that wants to be emphasized over here is that these principles are coming all the way back from Har Sinai itself. This isn't just another nation's wisdom literature. This is the Jewish people's tradition that goes back. So the Mishnah begins by saying, Moshe kibel Torah miSinai umesara liYoshua. Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah literally from Sinai, and he conveyed it, transmitted it to Yehoshua. Now, first of all, just we have to translate the words, and again, I'm going to be focusing in this, my treatment of Pirkei Avos here, I'll be focusing on just explaining the words themselves and how the Mefarshim and the Rishonim learn those words, as opposed to extrapolating further. And also, I'll give some historical context here. So Moshe Rabbeinu, of course, is being mekabel the Torah, receiving the Torah, and that is going to contrast, obviously, with the next verb, which is mesara, he transmitted it onwards. So the idea of a mesira, a transmission, is that when you're moser, you hand over everything. Everything is conveyed, nothing left behind, which is what is going on in the transmission of the mesora, the same word, the transmission of the tradition, in its wholeness, completely. But Moshe Rabbeinu, who's getting the Torah from Hashem, as great as Moshe Rabbeinu was, and of course as great as Hashem is as a teacher, there's obviously a sort of insurmountable gap between the infinitude of Hashem and the Torah and the finitude of Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu is the world's greatest kli kibul, receptacle to receive the Torah, but only can be receive as much as he's capable of as a finite being, and however much that is, it's not infinite. And therefore, Moshe was limited in how much he could receive. And therefore, the Torah is saying Moshe received all he could receive, but not more than that. Hence the word kibel, he received it. And the words misinai, from Sinai, is referring certainly to receiving it from Hashem at Har Sinai. If it meant simply that Hashem, that Moshe received the Torah at Har Sinai, Mount Sinai, then it would have said B-Sinai, at Sinai. But it's Mis-Sinai. This is a reference to Hashem, who is conveying it to Moshe Rabbeinu, who is up there for those 40 days the first time to receive the Torah. Now, when it says he received the Torah, what is that? So there's a famous Gemara in Maseches Brachos, the Daf Hei, that darshens the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, this is Shmos Chav Beis Yud Beis, so 24:12. Sorry, Chavdal Yud Beis, excuse me, 24:12. Hashem says, Vayomar Hashem al Moshe, Ale Alai Hahara, ascend to me up the mountain, Vahayesham, and you'll remain there, Ve'etna Lacha, and I will give to you. Now the next words are obviously redundant, superfluous. It says, Es luchasa evan, the stone tablets, v'ha Torah, and the Torah teachings, literally, instructions, v'ha mitzvah, and the command, asher kasavti l'horosam, that I wrote to teach them. A lot of words, hard to know what they mean. So the Gemara in Brachos Tav Hei darshens that these are the different things which were communicated to Moshe Rabbeinu. The luchos refer to the Aseres HaDibros, the Ten Commandments, which Moshe received on these kind of, they're called sapphire tablets that Hashem himself, so to speak, Kaviyachol, made for him. The Torah is a reference to the Torah Shebichsav, and although it wasn't written until later on, Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Torah Shebichsav, the written five books of Moses over the remaining 40 years in the desert. He transcribed them, Hashem dictated them word for word, but what was going to be there in principle was conveyed to Moshe Rabbeinu already at Har Sinai. The HaMitzvah, that refers to what the Gemara calls Mishnah, which we'll call the Torah Shebaal Peh, right? Which means the explanation of all the mitzvahs in the Torah. Then Asher Kasavti, that I wrote, that's a reference to the content of the rest of the Tanakh, meaning there are 24 books in Tanakh, five of which are the books of the five books of Moses, if you will, the Chumash, but the remaining 19 are the Nach, the Nevi'im Ksuvim, that also Moshe Rabbeinu was privy to. And finally, Lahorosam, to teach them, that's referring to Hora'a, is instruction, teaching, ruling, like halachic ruling, that is referring to the Gemara. So in short, Chazal understand that Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai was received, it was revealed to him, the entire corpus of Torah, at least all the principles of Torah that are there, including the Yud Midos, the what we call the Yud Gimel Midos, Shat Torah Nedresh Sven, these what we call 13 principles, Quantor Bishmol anyways, 13 principles by which the Torah can be extrapolated and decoded for more halachas, and that could actually create new halachas and new applications of those halachas, of course, also, so the Torah Shabbat Peh can grow. But all of this was revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai, and then Moshe Rabbeinu received what we'll call Torah Shabbat Peh, which he transmitted on to Yehoshua. So Yehoshua receives all the principles of the Torah, as well as Yud Gimel Midos, how to further extrapolate more halachas and principles out of Torah Shebichsav, as Moshe Rabbeinu will write it down. Okay. So then from Yehoshua, it says, V'Yehoshua l'zakenim. And then Yehoshua, Joshua, transmitted the Torah tradition to the zakenim. Now, who are these zakenim? Zakenim means elders. So the Machzor Vitri, which is a very old parish of Pirkei Avos, it's a siddur, whatever, it has a parish in Pirkei Avos there. So it lists 15 people that are included in the Zakenim, and they essentially boil down to the what we call the Shoftim, meaning in the, if you look in the Tanakh, you have the Chamisha Chumashe Torah, the five books of Moses, that was the first generation. Then you have Sefer Yehoshua, the book of Joshua, which that's Joshua, and then the next is going to be Sefer Shoftim, the second of the books of Neviim Rishonim, is Shoftim, the book of Judges. And those judges, those 15 judges, are who the Zakenim are, according to Machzor Vitri. So that would be Osnil ben Kanaz, Ehud ben Geira, Shamgar ben Anat, Barak ben Avinom, that's Devorah's husband, Gidon, Avimelech, Tola, Ya'ir HaGiladi, Pinchas, who was lived very long, Yiftach, Ivtzan, who was Boaz from the Sefer Rus, Elon, Avdon, Manoach, and Shimshon. So those are the 15, according to the Machzor Vitri, who are the Shoftim, who are included in what the Mishnah is referring to as Zakenim. Now, the Rambam, in his introduction to Mishnah Torah, so he also lays out the chain of the Mesorah. He has a Mesorah, which, based on another Chazal, has 40 generations in total from Moshe Rabbeinu to the Chasimus HaTalmud, the completion of the Talmud, which is Rav Ashi. So he has 40 generations, so he kind of compresses the generation of the stage called Zakenim, essentially, to just one person. That's Pinchas. Okay, so those Pinchas was already from the Chumash. He lived for very long, so he bridges that whole gap. The next generation in the Rambam's count is Eli HaKohen, and according to Bartanura, Eli already is part of the next group of people, the Nevi'im, the Mishnah goes on to talk about, who received it from the Zakenim. Meiri learns that Eli was still part of the Zakenim, so according to that, the Rambam would have two for Zakenim, Pinchas, and Eli HaKohen. Okay, fine. Now, Uzakenim le Nevi'im, the Zakenim, we'll call them the Shoftim, if you will, transmitted it to the Nevi'im, the prophets. Who are the Nevi'im here? So the Nevi'im, as far as the Rambam's counting is concerned, is going to start from Eli or Shmuel. Shmuel, of course, being the protege of who lived with Eli from as a young child. Then David, Achia, Eliyahu, Elisha, Yehoyada, Zechariah, Hosea, Amos, Yishaya, Micha, Yoel, Nahum, Chavakuk, Zephaniah, Yirmiyahu, and Baruch ben Neria. So that is the list of Nevi'im in order of Mesorah from Rebbe to Talmud. Yirmiyahu, the second to last one there, Yirmiyahu, he, of course, was the Navi at the very end of the Chorban Bais Rishon. He's the one who essentially wrote Eicha, largely, but he had a trusted secretary, if you will, his Talmud, Baruch ben Neria, who also was involved in the consolidation of his writings and so on, and went with him. So that is the last generations of the Nevi'im. Unevi'im, the Nevi'im, Mesarua la'anshe Knesset Hagadola. They transmitted it to the men of the Great Assembly, literal translation. So, who are the men of the Great Assembly? So, the men of the Great Assembly, as far as the Rambam's count is going to be symbolized simply by Ezra, as in Ezra Sofer from the Tanakh, and Shimon HaTzadik, who was essentially the last of the men of the Great Assembly, and we'll get to him in this next coming Mishnah. So, now, the word Mesarua here seems superfluous, because the Mishnah says, if you read it, it says, Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai, and then Umasra Liyoshua, but then after he's Mesara Liyoshua, then it says, V'Yoshua L'Zakenim, Zakenim Neviim, U'Neviim. It could have said, La'anshe Knesset Gadola. The word Mesarua here is, again, ostensibly superfluous. So the Mefarshim speak out. What's happening is, you might have thought that the Anshe Knesset Gadola really were people of lesser stature, and therefore they didn't get the full transmission, and therefore to disabuse you of that idea, we say no, they also got the full transmission. Although there are those who learned that they received it, the transmission in total between the 120 men of the Great Assembly, as opposed to individuals. That's maybe the case. Now, the Anshe Knesset Gadola, who are essentially the focal points, if you will, of the second half of this Mishnah, our Mishnah here, are so called, they're called men of the Great Assembly because, says the Gemara, they're the ones who essentially returned the Gedula, the greatness of Hashem, which is an interesting idea. Technically speaking, the Gemara speaks out how by the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, in Devarim, he refers to Hashem as Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, Vahanora, the God who is Gadol, which translates great, Gibor, powerful, Nora, awesome. All three of those things Hashem is. And after that, so if you look in Yirmiyah, there's a pasuk where he's referred to as Hakel, Hagadol, Vahagibor, no Nora. And in Daniel, say for Daniel, it says Hakel, Hagadol, Vahanora, no Gibor. So you see that Yirmiyahu witnessed the Chorban, and Daniel, who lived during the intermediate period between the two Bate Mikdash, so they lived in Galus there, in Persia, Daniel was. So they experienced like this Hester upon them, the concealment of Hashem, and therefore they didn't experience and couldn't express like Hashem's full glory of Gadol, Gibor, and Venora, as we say in our Shemona Esrei. But the Anshe Knesset Gadola did return that glory, as the Lashon of Chazal says, Hechziru Atar LeYoshna. They return the crown to its former glory, because the pasuk in Nehemiah again says, "Va'at Elokeinu Hakel Hagadol Hagibor Vahanora." So all three of the adjectives are back as they used to be, which is how we have in our Nusach Tefillah that was set up by Nehemiah. In the pasuk by Nehemiah. Now, this isn't just about wordplay. Of course, the point is that there was a loss of the human experience of Hashem's closeness during the exile Gullus period, which when the Anshe Knesset Gadola reconvened, it was returned. So how, why, what's going on over there? So you recall, the members of the Anshe Knesset Gadola, we don't know all of them, there are 120 in total, but we know many of them, and they are, the last of the great, Nevi'im. Amongst them were Nevi'im. So you have Ezra, you have Mordechai from like the Purim story, and you have Chag Zechariah Malachi, the last of the Nevi'im. You also have Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah. So you have these notables who are at the very end, the last of the Nevi'im. Chazal say that when Baal Sheni rolled around the beginning of the period, Anshe Knesset Gadola, so they had to fight against this inner drive people had to Avodah Zarah. They couldn't survive that in Bais Rishon time, so they prayed that the Yitzhar should be removed. But Zelu Mazeb Bar Elokim, when you lose this sixth sense of experiencing Ruchnias directly as a Navi can, so that's taken away. So I said that badly, I'm sorry. Once you lose this sort of sixth sense for experiencing like a drive, like a taiva for spiritual connection, that they had, so that was taken away, but then part and parcel of that is the ability to sort of experience Hashem directly as a Navi. So the Nevuah comes to an end, prophecy comes to an end. And what that means is that there's a major transition in the Jewish experience that's happening during the time of the men of the Anshe Knesset Gadola. The Jews are now have experienced Gullus. The majority are going to stay in Gullus essentially forevermore. They haven't, till this day, the majority of Jews haven't come back to Eretz Yisrael, basically until maybe the 21st century. We're on the cusp of that, depending on how you count, but it's been from then until now, there haven't been a majority of Jews in Eretz Yisrael. They lost their Nevi'im, so they had nowhere to, you know, turn, and therefore they're now turning to essentially their Torah texts primarily without Nevi'im. So the Torah texts become the primary focal point where they're now turning to get their guidance, not Nevi'im anymore. And therefore, Anshek and Eskadola, amongst other things, are the ones who are going to essentially, you know, canonize most of the Tanakh. They're going to ones who are going to establish our tefillah, because now we're going to have essentially the Jewish experience will continue to exist without a Beis HaMikdash, even if they will have a Beis HaMikdash operating there. It's Yisrael again during by Sheni's time, but the majority of Jews are away from the Beis HaMikdash, and the Jewish experience is happening not only with a Beis HaMikdash, as it had been in Bais Rishon's time, etc. So they're dealing with this transition in the Jewish life and experience. Okay? Now, the primary concern that the Anshek and Eskadola had to worry about is when Ezra came back to Eretz Yisrael, let's call that when he came back to Eretz Yisrael, so he found that the Jews had lost their way. Okay, the Jews remaining in Eretz Yisrael had lost the way. They had intermarried the Gentile women. They weren't keeping Shabbos anymore. So Ezra and with Nehemiah's help, got them to rebuild Jerusalem. They rebuilt. They had a Beis HaMikdash now operating again. They got rid of their non-Jewish wives. They reinforced keeping of Torah. They made institutions like Muktzah to make sure Shabbos should now be observed properly and so on. But they needed to make sure that there was now a generation of Jews who were strengthened in their Yiddishkeit and their observance of mitzvahs and had the ability to sort of like take the Torah and reinforce it and its observance. Therefore, their focus is going to be on establishing a Jewish experience back in Israel under Bais Sheni, which is Torah focused and which is strong and resilient. So they're now going to give three pieces of advice, all of which seem to be around the effort to ensure that Torah is strengthened, Torah observance is strengthened, and Torah is transmitted successfully to future generations, despite the challenge that they had up to that point. So now we're going to say that it says that the Anshek and Eskadola, they said three things. Heim amru shlosh devarim. Now the truth is they, of course, said many more than three things. I told you they are the ones who established brachos and the tefilos and the kiddushim and havdalos, etc. They did lots of things. But these three are relevant to this ensuring of the maintenance and transmission and observance of the Torah. So first they said, hevu mesunim bedin. Number one, they said, this is an instruction to the judges, if you will, the dayanim. Be matun. Matun means don't move too fast. Like the word hamtana means to wait in modern Hebrew. Be deliberate in your judgment, often translated as. Think things through carefully, judge each case on its own merits, because essentially now without a Navi, you're going to need to search every case like a precedence for future cases. We want the Torah to be respected, respectable, enforced, enforceable, sensible, and therefore every judgment that the Sanhedrin or the other Dayanim should rule, the Anshek and Eskadola should rule, should be well-reasoned, well-thought-out, because it's going to become precedent for subsequent rulings, etc. That's number one. Number two, the Hamidu Talmidim Harbe. You should literally stand up many students. Now, the word Ha'amidu is a little peculiar. It's a hefil, a causative, from the word Omed, to stand. It cause the students to stand up. So the simple reading here would presumably mean that you have to, the role of a educator is to make his student be independent. He can stand on his own two feet. As Chazal point out in Baal Osecha, when they're lighting the menorah, the menorah's light has to come on its own. So similarly, every student should be able to be independent. And the goal of an educator, and only the goal of a parent in his capacity as an educator, is to foster independence, that he should be, not necessary. You're succeeding when you've transmitted what you need to transmit to your student or your child, so they don't need you anymore. As hard as that is for the teacher or the parent, you don't want to be needed. You want the child to be able to stand on his own two feet. So v'hamidu, stand him up. And talmidim harbe, lots of students. Now, lots of students has the obvious benefit of you have now the Mesorah spreading. You have knowledge of Torah spreading with lots of students, which will then sort of be a safety net to ensure that the Torah isn't forgotten, right? That there's Torah awareness in the larger community because it's widespread. Also, of course, it's a natural benefit to the teachers that the students should be many. The more students one has, then the better off the teacher is, because The students ask good questions. They sharpen the Rebbe. They, you know, raise issues which need to be considered, which the Rebbe wouldn't have thought of otherwise. So those are very, very important, just to have students in and of itself. There's a very famous, I think, very famous Chazal in Masechet Tanis, Daf Zayin. Rabbi Chanina said that Harbi Lamadati Merabosai, I learned a lot from my teachers, Umachavera Yoser Merabosai, and even more from my colleagues, Umetalmidai Yoser Mekulan, but from my students I learned most of all. So you see, it's a benefit to have lots of students, not just for the students and the transmission of the Torah, but for the teacher himself. Now, importantly, and Bartonura emphasizes this, there's a second issue happening, which is a bit of a subtext, which maybe is lost on the reader who doesn't understand the, you know, how things are going. There was an ongoing tension in the Jewish community regarding how elitist one should be with respect to who should be eligible to be part of the transmission and be taught Torah. So there was definitely schools of thought who said, really, only like, you shouldn't waste your time with anyone with the best of the best. People can master the transmission because they have the wherewithal and the ability to understand and live by and convey and master the Torah. And those are the ones who should be taught, and the other ones not. I think the most famous illustration of this is that is the Gemara in Brachas, Chav Ches, where it says that when Rabban Gamliel in Yavna was temporarily deposed and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was put in his place, so Rabban Gamliel essentially said, you can't come learn in the Beis HaMikdash here in Yavna unless you're tocho kabaro, literally your insides are like your outsides, meaning that a person already is quite accomplished and has self-mastery. But Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who was much younger than him, had a different approach. He basically threw the doors open and said, whoever wants to come learn, please come. And it says on that day, you know, they had to add 300 benches to the Beis HaMikdash, and that was the famous day where all the questions were answered, and the Masechet Edios was built that day, and so on. So the point is, you see, there was a tension between how it should be, sort of elitist or sort of open to everybody, populist, if you will. And the Gemara actually over there in Brachos comes out clearly in favor of this more like popular approach, because it says that although when Rabban Gamliel panicked and saw, oh my goodness, so many kids want to learn, or so many people want to learn, and I'm withholding that from them, so he said he saw a dream which told him, no, you're really right. But the Gemara says, really, he wasn't right at all. This dream was just to make him feel good, but actually, no, it's better to let everyone who wants to learn, learn. And in a way more explicitly than that, there's a Avos Reb Nasan, again, the commentary is sort of from the Tanai period on Pirkei Avos itself. And Avos Reb Nasan says that Beis Shammai's opinion, so this is the beginning of, you know, the Tanaic era, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, So Beis Shammai held, kind of like Rabban Gamliel, that you have to sort of be only the best of the best can come learn in our Beis Midrash. It says explicitly that Avos Reb Nasan says that Beis Shammai held, Al Yishana Adam, you shouldn't teach people, El Lemi Shehu Chacham V'Anav Uben Avos V'Ashir, had these four criteria. He has to be, first of all, a Chacham, he has to be smart, because if you can't, you know, what's the point of teaching if you can't learn? Second of all, he has to be an anav. I think this is a catch-all for like having good midos in general. The king pin of all good midos, of course, is anava. Then you have ben avos. That means he's like has lineage. He's got yichus. He's from. He's not just. He's not a convert. He's not a. He's not a child of a, you know, a woodchopper. No. This person is like from the line of scholars, and he has a good pedigree. And va'ashir, he's rich. Now the idea of the rich here isn't rich per se. It's that if a person isn't independently wealthy, so then he's going to have to spend a lot of time earning a living. And if that's the case, he can't sit and learn. So Beis Shammai's position was only people who have the ability to sit and learn all day, who could therefore master the Mesorah, they're the ones who we should focus on and let them come to our Beis Midrash. In contrast, Beis Hillel said, no. They held, everyone come learn. Shahar b'poshim hayu behem b'Yisrael. There were lots of sinners in the Jewish people, v'niskarvu l'talmud Torah, they were drawn close to Torah study, v'yatzu mehem tzadikim chasidim uksherim, and many of them emerged then being tzadikim, righteous, chasidim, pious, saintly, and ksherim, you know, proper, on the straight and narrow. So again, that's what the Mishnah is saying here, that one should be sort of open to anyone learning Torah, like Hillel, and the more the merrier in terms of Talmidim. And finally, Va'asus Yag LaTorah, the third ingredient they're suggesting here, again, to make sure that Torah is not trampled anymore and it's reinforced, is to make a siyag. A siyag is like a protective fence, guardrails. So make a protective fence for the Torah. This is a reference to rabbinic enactments, which we'll call gzeros, right? These are rabbinic enactments that are there to protect the Torah from being violated. So think of like shvus on Shabbos, all these rabbinic enactments on Shabbos. You know, you can't do all sorts of things which midoraisa are mutar because we don't want people to inadvertently come to break Shabbos. So we'll, you know, not even do what we call today derabanan. You can't climb trees and you, and so on and so forth, okay? Lest you come to do a malacha. So those essentially are the three things that the Mishnah is recording that the Anshei Knesset Gedola were insistent upon.